Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 23 of the 2QB Experience. This is the Ryan Fitzpatrick Experience. I tried to make it the Madison Bumgarner Experience, but this is a football podcast, I've just been told. So we're running with football players in the featured role. On the line with me, Joshua Lake at Lake 2QBs. I should have introduced myself as well. I'm Greg Smith at Greg Sauce on Twitter. Josh, it's a pretty sloppy intro. How are you handling it?
Hey, I like it. It took me a second to process. I was thinking, is that a backup quarterback that Sal has recently written up? I've not heard that name. Turns out, no, it's just a second-tier sport.
He's my only hope as a Giants fan to steal one game from the unstoppable Chicago Cubs before they win the World Series and break an age-old curse. If you don't think that's a reverse jinx, then you're kidding yourself. Go Giants. Josh, kicking things off, I want to talk about something that we just ended up discussing a lot this weekend, and I kind of want to bring it into the podcast, and this was Kirk Cousins, Joe Flacco, and the wind in Baltimore on Sunday, and I just want to kind of pick your brain a little bit, because we discussed it a lot, but were there any sort of takeaways from that situation and how you regarded those players versus others, or how you regarded like the effects of weather on fantasy production from, you know, certain other positions? I just thought it was a really interesting situation. I want to hear what you think about that.
Yeah, it was one that you and I and several of our staff writers, we were all discussing in the lead up to the games. And props to Jim Sands, especially along with Sal over on the QB2 Experience podcast.
Yep.
They're the ones that really made me think about this game in terms of weather beforehand and even flagged the issue for me before. I mean, they record what on Wednesdays? And so very impressive lead time. And I thought it was really interesting to really be told, hey, if the wind gets higher, it's going to affect passing, because that's not on my checklist of things that I typically look at going into a week. I don't pull up the weather forecast, but I probably should. And this game certainly made me think a little more about it.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that's not predictable and it's not regular. So when it does happen, it's easy to let it slip between the cracks. Like I threw out a tweet that morning, you know, based on our discussions that said, look, this is your 43rd reminder, but I don't know if anybody had actually tweeted it out, but a reminder to get, you know, the kickers in that game out of your lineups and look for other kickers. And that's not to say the guys who were involved didn't score any points, because they did, but I mean, just why not avoid that situation if you can? But I was surprised when people came back to me and said, why would I bench these guys? Not even, and they didn't realize there was a high wind forecast or anything like that. It was interesting. I don't know. I had a hard time kind of dealing with, you know, the players in that game and my rankings on Sunday morning. I moved Flacco and Cousins way down, both outside of the top 20. And that was, I think, generally correct. But one of the more interesting discussions I thought we had was regarding the receivers and what types of receivers you would want, if any, in that game. Do you want to talk about your thought process on that?
Yeah, that was another interesting discussion. My intuitive thought, and I have no stats to back it up, is that the deep threats, kind of Mike Wallace and DeSean Jackson, will be hurt, because the longer the ball stays in the air, the more opportunity the wind has to impact its trajectory. And so I assumed that would be a negative thing, and that the passes would be shorter. So you're looking at slot guys, tight ends, running backs, and that, because we know this is the modern NFL. They're not going to just say, okay, we're running it 60 times. So there's going to be passing. It just, my thought was, it's probably going to be shorter routes.
Yeah, and we saw that bear out to some extent. Like the guys who were most active for, you know, those teams, Pierre Garçon had tied for the most targets on his team with DeSean Jackson, but Garçon caught more passes. He caught the touchdown. He had more yardage. Those shorter routes definitely worked out for him. And I think, hold on while I look this up, I think that Jordan Reed had a decent game as well. Yeah, he had 11 targets and 8 catches for 73 yards. So he was definitely the focal point of the offense. So that kind of backs up what you're saying, you know, seeing DeSean Jackson take a back seat to some extent. And what did you see on the Baltimore side of the ball, Josh?
Yeah, Baltimore was a little less in line with what I had predicted, just that Mike Wallace still led the team in targets with 11. Dennis Pitta is next with 8. And he caught 7 of them for 63 yards, which led the team. And so I unfortunately didn't get to watch this game. I usually watch most of the Washington games, but was out with family and an event, so I didn't get to watch this. So I don't know exactly how those routes looked, but I had expected Wallace would have a smaller role, but he really didn't. He was in a week where Steve Smith only got three targets and was kind of banged up, Mike Wallace was really leaned on.
I mean, that could be indicative of just their offense in general, that they have to take those deep shots to make sure that the running game and the shorter routes are going to work at all. I mean, Crockett Gilmore did get seven targets, which is only one fewer than Dennis Pitta. So they definitely had that tight end targeting mentality as well. Like 15 targets across two tight ends is more than Mike Wallace got. So, yeah, it was a very interesting matchup. So I wanted to touch on that. Anything else on that game that you wanted to cover before we move on?
Yeah, just Joe Flacco's struggles continue to be kind of crazy to me. Of the quarterbacks with at least 75 attempts this season, he has the second lowest yards per attempt at 5.9 yards per attempt. And that really shocks me, given that, like you said, with Mike Wallace and the deep game, that's kind of a part of what they do. But just the offense as a whole has not been successful, and I think that impacts it. Flacco just really hasn't had the upside that a lot of us were hoping for. But the news that just came out today is that Mark Trestman has been removed as the offensive coordinator. And so it is possible that the offense changes. Whether they have the pieces to get a lot better, who knows? But you look for kind of outside reasons to believe that a team may change. That does give you one.
Yeah, that's interesting. But we know that Trestman is generally a good offensive coordinator. Like, he's succeeded in that role for, you know, a lot of different seasons. Like last year with Flacco himself, like they had probably his best opening to a season statistically, and, you know, injury derailed Flacco in that. But yeah, I don't know if Trestman was the problem. It seems like just a matter of their schedule and maybe the fact that Joe Flacco isn't that good and doesn't have the upside that everyone wants him to have. Like sometimes you wait and wait and wait for that stuff to pop up with players and it just never materializes. So I don't know. I'm not big on Flacco. I think he's a fine, you know, QB2 streamer type. But I mean, that was how I drafted him as well. So I think he is who we thought he was, to, you know, borrow from Dennis Green. But yeah, let's keep going. Talk about some more of the stuff that went on in week 5. And we mentioned this on last week's podcast, but Marcus Mariota had a very nice matchup against Miami, and he got off the schneid. He delivered QB1 at this point. We still have, you know, Derek Anderson, who will probably, you know, throw for a million points tonight against the Tampa defense. And also the other side, Jameis Winston, who could potentially top Mariota this week. But what did you think about Mariota, and how do you feel about him going forward? Was this just, you know, indicative of the matchup?
Yeah, this is one of those kind of unusual games where he only had 163 passing yards. It was kind of a Tyrod Taylor-esque sort of a game where really wasn't throwing very far downfield. There's a lot of really short passes, nothing too interesting, but really effective. Three passing touchdowns, 7 rushes for 60 yards and a touchdown. So he got in the end zone, and that's just such a high priority thing in this game, fantasy football, that is, that it really made the difference. But he stayed kind of his same low volume, low yardage. The offense really isn't running through the passing game, but the difference was it wasn't just DeMarco Murray. It was really getting the passing game involved and letting Mariota kind of turn things loose for the first time this season on the ground.
Yeah, and I do think, you know, Delanie Walker getting back to full health helps. And looking forward, there's some reason for optimism. We know that the Dolphins contributed via their awful defense, but, you know, the next up for Mariota are the Browns, the Colts, the Jaguars, and the Chargers, and then the Packers. And, I mean, even the Packers, who did, you know, shut Eli down, but we'll get to him later. They have been a little soft against the pass this season. Like, generally, the schedule for Mariota is looking up. So if you maybe want to try to catch somebody thinking they're selling high on him, you might be able to get some value there. Now, you know, in the fantasy playoffs, it might not be quite as appealing. You know, he gets the Broncos and the Chiefs later in the season, and that Chiefs game is at Arrowhead. But anyway, yeah, I think that this does represent an interesting, you know, kind of crossroads for Mariota in terms of how we need to, you know, evaluate him and whether or not you want to trade for him or continue to use him if you already own him. I think you can start to feel better about it. I don't know. It's such a small sample size to lean on this one game and say that, oh yeah, that fixed everything. Now he's good.
Right. I don't know that we saw enough to say he is fixed. It's, if I have him, I would really, really try and ship him this week and see if I can find someone that's excited by that QB1 week. Because it has been so rough, and I think the offense as a whole is still going to struggle.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, that's definitely the probably the chalk play, right? If you have him and you can sell him this week, you should do it. Moving on, Tom Brady. He's back. Now, I have a question for you, though. Is he angry Tom, or is he just really friggin' good at football and it doesn't matter, like, whether he's angry or not?
Yeah, I haven't put a lot of stock into the angry Tom theory myself, but and one of the things that I noticed, I went back and looked at the splits for what New England was doing, because one theory was they just won't even bother running the ball. They'll just let Tom throw all over everyone. And they had 41 pass attempts and 35 rushes. So it was a near even split. It just, he's really friggin' good, to your point. I think this is a good offense and a good quarterback. And they were against a really bad team, which just highlights how the difference in skill was really on display there.
Yeah, what do you think about the split in production between Martellus Bennett and Rob Gronkowski? Do you think that's something we can expect moving forward? Or would you expect Gronk to start to take more of those red zone looks from Bennett as we move forward?
I honestly don't think it's going to be a lot different. I think that the touchdowns are a little bit more, like, it's going to change back and forth. I'm not saying that it'll be all the red zone looks to Bennett, but 8 targets for Martellus Bennett, 7 for Gronkowski. I think we've seen enough out of their receivers to say they don't really have great receivers outside of Julian Edelman. And so I bet they are going to involve these two tight ends quite a bit, and I think they'll both be pretty successful. But as far as red zone opportunities, that's a good question. I haven't looked into exactly how that played out this week. I don't know if you looked at it.
I did not. I was just curious as to whether or not you were buying back in on Gronk. I mean, not to say you were out by any stretch, but yeah, I think it's an interesting scenario because, you know, we all wanted Gronk to be this first round guy, but the Patriots just have so many weapons now with Bennett, you know, with the receivers, that I don't know. I don't know if you can count on Gronk to be that target monster that he has been in seasons past.
Right. I think that we finally are seeing him healthy, but this is an offense where he doesn't have to do everything, it looks like. If Martellus can continue to be good, and his ankle getting rolled up on kind of worried me, but he seemed to come back fine. As long as Martellus is healthy, yeah, Gronk doesn't have to do everything, which is nice for the offense, but it doesn't mean Gronk is this elite, top-tier kind of guy so far above the rest that he has been in some years.
Yeah, and Edelman is still going to get his targets. He had 10, I think, that which led the team. Chris Hogan got 5 targets. Like, he's clearly going to be involved. He had a really nice day, 114 yards. There are just more options, more legit options for Brady to throw to now, and I think that that might cap Gronkowski's ceiling to some extent. With that said, he's still amazing. Like, there were some plays, like there was one catch and run he had just going down the sidelines where he was just shedding Browns tacklers. They all looked like little goblins trying to take down like an ogre, you know. It was just such a joke, and he's just mowing these guys over. And I'm thinking to myself, like, how do you stop this guy without just hurting him? And I think that that's what this comes down to with the Patriots, is that they don't want to give him 12 targets a game, because the more they give him in the regular season, the more likely he is to get hurt. And when they have all these other viable targets, might as well spread the ball around, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. That one play it was just one of those iconic moments. Like you said, it kind of makes you think of various scenes in movies, because he just would not be brought down at all.
Yeah, and he looked like Rob Gronkowski again. And that was probably the biggest takeaway for me, is that I do think he's healthy enough to be, you know, an every week starter for you in fantasy. I just think that, you know, as with all other tight ends, it's a situation where he might just have some off weeks because the other receivers are getting more targets. Let's keep going. The Broncos. We've talked a lot about Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch, and this is one thing that, you know, Sal and Jim touched on the QB2 experience, was that matchup that they were heading into with Atlanta. You know, Atlanta being this very lucrative fantasy defense to play quarterbacks against, and Paxton Lynch did not deliver. Is it safe to say he isn't ready? Is this one game enough experience, you think, for him to maybe start to put it together? Because Trevor Siemian wasn't very good at his first two games either.
No, that's a good point. That Siemian, I mean, we were talking so badly about early on while you were traveling Europe, and he came on. As someone who thought that Lynch was going to take this job at some point, I'm worried by the narrative, or kind of the public message coming out from Kubiak and others, that Lynch was just temporary. Siemian was their starter. And then to see Lynch really struggle doesn't do anything to dissuade them of that view. I'm less confident that Lynch is going to be kind of getting back into the starting role very soon because it was pretty ugly in a fine matchup.
Yeah, absolutely. I did start him in a league where I had to bench Joe Flacco for fear of the wind, and it wasn't really that much of a difference in the end. Lynch actually was under Flacco by, a quarter of a point or something like that. So it's basically a wash. He wasn't the reason I'm going to lose that matchup, which I am. But it just made me feel a little sick that I had these expectations, and I'm not, blaming anybody but myself here. That, like, I don't know. I kind of was looking at him with these rose-colored shades on, thinking, well, I mean, we saw what Trevor Siemian did, and Lynch is probably just as good an athlete, and just as raw from like an experience level, that he should just be able to slide in and put up, 17, 18 points against the Atlanta defense, no problem. And seeing his struggles against that defense really kind of opened my eyes. And I'm not sure that, like you, I'm not sure that Lynch is a guarantee even to start next week if Siemian is healthy enough to go. And I mean, does that make you feel better if you're a Siemian owner?
Yeah, if you hung on to him through this week, absolutely, because we had seen some upticks over his last 1.5 healthy games. So I think you have to be interested, and the fact that you may still have a starting NFL quarterback is never a bad thing. I think it is still kind of the same as we were saying before, low-ish upside. I mean, he clearly showed he can hit upside, but I think he's going to be kind of a boring option most weeks. But an NFL starter still has a lot more value than someone that's backing up a rookie.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that they both, whichever one of them starts, they both fall into that category of QB2 streaming options,
Right.
QB3s essentially. So that's the way I view them both going forward, and value them in that regard. Let's get back to that New England and Cleveland matchup, because this is a quarterback centric episode, and we saw how many quarterbacks from Cleveland in that game?
I lost count. It was kind of unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, Kessler goes down, Whitehurst comes in, Whitehurst goes down, Terrell Pryor's taking snaps. Like, not we're seeing reports now that Kessler should be healthy enough to play, that McCown might be healthy enough to play. What do we do with this QB situation in Cleveland? Do we try to, mine some upside here, or do we just stay away?
Yeah, because one of the things that we were really excited about was Josh Gordon coming back and that this offense was going to have some good receivers, and Gordon's not coming back. Coleman's been hurt. There isn't nearly the excitement that we thought there might be. One thing that I find interesting is that Kessler has been completing 67% of his passes. He's been pretty accurate. And I do think that he is not going to be a very interesting option if he's the starter, but I think the fact that their offense can have some good accuracy, good completion percentage without Corey Coleman, if you get Josh McCown back under center and he's throwing to Pryor and Coleman and Barnage and Duke Johnson, I think Josh McCown is going to have some value there, even if I'm not excited in the rookie.
Yeah, I think that McCown is the guy that you want if he's playing. My concern at this point is that the Browns are so bad that they might as well see what they have in the rookie. And shout out to Ben Cummins for, kind of identifying that trait in Kessler, that accuracy you were talking about early on in the preseason, because that wasn't something I was expecting from any rookie quarterback. And it has been impressive to see the percentage at which he completes his passes.
Yeah, just because like you were saying, in such a bad offense, you would expect a lot of things to go wrong. And so to be able to complete that higher percentage as a rookie in a bad offense, it's not fantasy relevant that he's completing a lot of his passes, but it is a sign that maybe he has what it takes to be kind of a boring Alex Smith type at some point in his career.
Yeah, and that sort of stuff we talk about all the time is usable in two quarterback fantasy. Now, it's not exciting, but if you end up with Kessler on your roster and he is the starter, you can play him if you need to. Having him over McCown, that's, yeah, I wonder what the Browns are going to do there. I have no clear picture of that. I would expect that McCown probably gets a shot to come back at some point, but either at the first sign of trouble or, another injury, if it occurs, like, Kessler's the guy, and they're just going to roll with him because he is, in theory, the future of that franchise.
Yeah, and it's just this bizarre. I mean, remember coming into the off season, not that or coming into the season, not that long ago, we were talking about RG3's upside, and he's just completely gone. This NFL sport, this game really moves quick.
Yeah. Do you ever feel bad about enjoying the NFL as much as you do, like all the injuries these guys are experiencing and whatnot. My buddy and I were talking about that as we were watching the game yesterday. Like, we know about all the concussion stuff, and that definitely is an issue that the NFL constantly needs to be trying to improve. But just these other, you know, like bone breaks and soft tissue injuries, like, does that ever make you feel a little squeamish?
Yeah, it raises, if this is getting far afield from fantasy, but it makes your conscience kind of just have that spidey sense of, should I be cheering this on? Is this getting too close to, like, the Coliseum? Just what is the line? It's not there, but yeah, every time you see one of them get hurt and you're analyzing what that does to your fake team and you're just not thinking about the humanity of what just happened, it certainly is something that I think we ought to all think through how we view injuries in this game.
Yeah, and on top of that, we need to apply the same filter to how we look at bad performance. You know, we can't say, you know, look at a guy who's underperforming, and I bring this up as a segue for Eli Manning. We can't look at Eli and say, oh, he's been crappy this year, I should, you know, send him a bunch of angry tweets. Like,
right.
That's not right. But at the same time, if we are trying to win our fantasy leagues, we don't have to, you know, at Eli Manning, but we can try to, you know, figure out what his value is, if it's going to get better. Where are you at on Eli? Are you expecting a bounce back anytime soon? Because we talked about in the preseason that this is a guy who is prone to bad weeks, and we've seen a lot of them so far.
Yeah, I think we were pretty dead on in pointing that out, that he has these bad weeks. What we didn't really expect is four of them in a row. Two touchdowns in four games. Really just a kind of a dismal performance. He hasn't been good all around, and he is, at this point, I'm trying to look it up, we are recording at the start of the Monday night game, but coming into Monday night, he is QB 29 in points per game. It's the consistency of the bad performances that worries me, because he's not been getting the touchdowns, but he also hasn't thrown nearly the yardage volume that I would have expected. I mean, he didn't even break 200 yards against a good Packers matchup, or in a good Packers matchup this week. And yeah, it's concerning that this offense that I would have really expected had some high upside really hasn't hit it since week one.
He's had a variety of good matchups too. He got Dallas in week one, New Orleans in week two, Washington in week three. I mean, Washington's pass defense is a little bit better than their run defense, but still, like, these are not bad matchups. The only bad one he had was against Minnesota in week four, where he was under 10 points. I'm concerned. Like, I think that we might be in for another one of those just Eli apocalypse seasons. Now, you can't necessarily bank on that, because, like we said, you know, he's been prone to, you know, big weeks in addition to his bad weeks. You know, he might finish under QB 24 over 25% of the time, but he finishes as a top 10 guy, you know, about 30% of the time. So we're through, what, about a quarter of the fantasy season? Or I guess more than that at this point. If those numbers, if those percentages do hold up over the long haul, if this is just an issue of sample size, then better weeks are coming. Now, I'm going to pull up the Giants schedule real quick, so stand by.
Yeah, they've got the Rams next week, which has not been nearly as scary as we thought coming into the season. And then they go on. Or sorry, that's 2 weeks. They have Ravens, then Rams, then a bye.
Great. I'd definitely be a little scared of Eli in these next few weeks. What happens after the bye, Josh?
Then they've got Eagles and Bengals, who are both tough matchups. And then Bears, Browns, Steelers, Cowboys. It kind of lightens up for the fantasy playoffs.
Man, I don't know if you can wait that long in a 2QB league, though. You know right. What I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. I don't know that he's cuttable is the problem.
Definitely not.
So he kind of is just sitting on your bench, kind of being a wasted roster spot for several weeks.
So do you think you should be trying to get out from under him in some way? Like, do you look to maybe, we talked about the upcoming schedule improvement for Marcus Mariota. Like, would you be willing to try to deal Eli for Mariota? I mean, you're selling low on Manning, but I don't know. Like, maybe he deserves that.
I don't think I am there. I am willing to keep Eli because I do think that the upside will come. I don't think that Odell Beckham is going to be shut down nearly to the degree he has. And I just tend to think that this has to improve. And so I don't know that I'd be selling right now because I expect a value uptick, even if he's not the QB1 you were hoping for when you drafted him. I don't know. I'm not ready to sell, and maybe I just end up losing, and this is one of those penny stocks that just goes to zero, goes bankrupt. But he's someone that I'm willing to give a shot to, because like you pointed out, we have seen this kind of history over the last several years of really bad weeks, but then also some really explosive highs.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if there are some, you know, supposedly lesser talented quarterbacks that you could be targeting to get out from under Eli. Like, I think Mariota, you know, doesn't have quite the profile that Eli does, and maybe that's something you could pull. I don't know. It's hard to think exactly about which quarterbacks you would target, because it's not that easy just to swap QBs in two QB leagues based upon scheduling and bye weeks and all that good stuff that you and your opponents have to be thinking about all the time. But I don't know. I think it's worth exploring if you have the time to do that the next week or two to, I don't know, maybe see if an Eli deal can materialize out of nowhere. But let's keep going. Let's get to the two QB booms and busts of the week. Let's start with the bust. And while Eli was bad, Ryan Tannehill was much, much worse. What the hell is going on with Ryan Tannehill, Josh?
Oh, this has been painful. He has been dreadful. He's somehow been better than Eli Manning in points per game, but it just hasn't been pretty. And this week was a train wreck. I mean, depending on your scoring, he certainly had single digit points. He was likely the worst starting quarterback. And I say starting quarterback, he got outscored by Charlie Whitehurst and Cody Kessler both. So, ugh, it was painful. And last week was painful. The team doesn't look good. They look lost. The fact that I believe it was Adam Gase that had to come out after the game and say Ryan Tannehill's our starter for the whole year. It's just kind of that when you're at the point that you've got to say, yes, we're sticking with someone, you know they're struggling.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they have to, though, don't you? Like, Matt Moore is not the answer either.
Right, and that's the problem is if they're not competitive enough that they're going to be a playoff team, and Matt Moore is old and been around long enough that he's clearly not their future. So they're kind of stuck in a lost season if this continues the way it has.
Yeah, I saw a tweet earlier from Armando Salguero, and he noted that, or he had a quote from Gase saying, "We've had 18 dropback passes, and Tannehill is hit or sacked on 9 of them." So Gase understands that it's not all Tannehill's fault, and I do appreciate that coming from the coaching staff, but at the same time, he does have to be better. Like, something's got to give, or else, you know, fantasy owners and the team, the Miami Dolphins themselves, are going to have to move on.
So the Dolphins host the Steelers this week, and the Steelers have been pretty favorable for passing games. Are you optimistic that things turn around this week? I mean, we did see him have three pretty reasonable first weeks. I mean, he had 2 touchdowns in week 2. He had 3 touchdowns in week 3. He had more than 300 yards in both of those games. So is it just a matchups thing that the Bengals and the Titans were so much better and the Steelers will be a good thing for him? Or is this a place where you're legitimately concerned about him?
I mean, I don't know if you can say that because Ryan Fitzpatrick didn't look that good against the Steelers yesterday. And I don't know if Tannehill's that much better than Fitzpatrick. I think they're both kind of, you know, average talent quarterbacks. And we'll get more to Fitzpatrick in the spotlight section. But the matchup against Pittsburgh is not one that I'm, you know, really excited about.
Yeah, and they did shut down Kirk Cousins in week 1, to your point. I just looked at before this week, and you're right about that as well. Dalton, Wentz, and Smith all had 20-plus point games against Pittsburgh, and those are not kind of the elite passers in the league. So I would think a reasonable passing game could do okay against him, but you're right. We'll get to Fitzpatrick. He definitely struggled this week.
Well, and Tannehill had a fine matchup this week against Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee's defense isn't terrible, but yeah, I mean, those are the types of games where a quarterback needs to be able to put up some amount of fight, and he didn't do it at all. The boom of the week is Brian Hoygoat, Goatier. What's the proper usage here? Do you know?
I have not seen it. I think he needs to inform us how he'd prefer it to be pronounced.
Is it Brygoat, Goat? I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Brygoat's not bad.
But yeah, Jay Cutler's ain't getting his job back, is he?
Yeah, I mean, when John Fox is saying we don't have a plan for when Cutler comes back, we'll see, who knows. I mean, Trevor Siebian has gotten better endorsements from his coach than Jay Cutler has. I don't see a reason that Cutler is the presumptive starter when he comes back. I mean, Hoyer could pull out a wild card performance like he had last year, where he's just dreadful and maybe Cutler comes back, but I've got to think he's the presumptive favorite to keep the job the rest of the year.
So this might be the perfect counterpoint or the perfect example of what I was going for with Eli earlier, looking for maybe a quarterback who we think is worse than Eli, but might be better from a fantasy standpoint moving forward. Would you rather have Eli Manning or Brian Hoyer going forward?
I'd take Eli, but I hear your point. It's something I probably should think about more. I like Eli's guaranteed role, and I do like that we've seen proven elite upside. But Hoyer, I totally hear your point. So, I mean, I think you probably have the opposite position, so I'm curious to hear if you would do it.
Yeah, I would definitely lean towards Hoyer, mostly based upon the schedule that I'm looking at. They have Jacksonville in week 6 and Green Bay in week 7. Minnesota in week 8 is not good. You don't want to play him there, of course. And then the bye. After that, he gets Tampa Bay, New York, Tennessee, San Francisco, Detroit, Green Bay, and Washington. And they don't play Minnesota again until week 17 when, you know, most fantasy leagues will be done. So that's beautiful. You only have to play the Minnesota defense once, even though you're in the same division. Like, I don't know. I might take Hoyer over Eli. I think I would.
And that's for any listeners that feel the same way. I mean, absolutely send out those deals if you have Eli, because I think there are plenty of people that are going to say, oh, it's Brian Hoyer. He's terrible. Like, everyone watched the playoff game and knows he's a backup. And you should see the Twitter hate we get on our site account when we tweet Hoyer stats. Just so many people believe he's so terrible. And so if you really believe he's going to be better than Eli going forward, I'm pretty certain you could make that trade.
And you might even be able to get the Eli owner to, or the Hoyer owner to throw in something else if you're giving up Eli.
Right.
I want to get back real quick to, you know, the jokes we're making about Hoyer being the GOAT and just kind of talk about some actual GOATs, you know, greatest of all times. And I just kind of want to hear your thoughts on these, Josh. Who do you think is the actual GOAT quarterback?
I think this is a debate you and I had early in the offseason, if memory serves. But to me, one of the struggles I have is that I'm not well-versed in really the really old kind of history of the NFL. So the Fran Tarkentons, et cetera, of the world, I don't have as good a knowledge base. So for me, it's the ones that I've seen in my lifetime, even though it was really early lifetime. Joe Montana comes very quickly to mind just because of how successful he was. And for such a length of time, John Elway is another one on that list.
So you have to pick one, Josh.
I know. I'm so bad at this favorites thing. The one that really comes to mind is Joe Montana for me.
Okay, I'm glad you picked Montana so I can go a different direction. I would have felt bad as a Niners fan not picking Montana, but since you did, I'll go with Tom Brady. The GOAT coach.
I think Bill Belichick is pretty easy for me there.
Agreed. Moving on. The GOAT movie Batman.
Oh, this is a terrible question for me because I can't come up with almost any names of Batmans. I just am not a movie buff.
Okay, so Michael Keaton played Batman early on in the 80s. I'm talking about the actor. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I should have been more clear on that. And I think who was next? I don't remember who was next, but George Clooney got in there. Christian Bale, of course, has been in the more recent Batmans along with Ben Affleck. what else do we got? There was a Val Kilmer Batman, but the correct answer is Adam West, the original Batman.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. All right. Good to know there's a correct answer.
I'll
be ready for the next time this comes up on the test.
How about the GOAT running back?
Man, all of these, I'm coming up with the answer off the top of my head.
That's fine. First one that comes to mind, I think, is good.
Yeah, I mean, again, just limited by my knowledge, LaDainian Tomlinson had such a ridiculous kind of, it was just so impressive that he's the name that jumps to mind.
Yeah, no, I love that pick. It was down to him and Jamal Charles for me, and I picked Charles. And there is only one answer to this next one, the GOAT wide receiver.
Yeah, that's Jerry Rice.
He's the GOAT football player, I think.
Yeah, I he very well might be.
All right, any other GOATs you want to go over here while we're on the topic?
I mean, you said we were going to talk about real goats. I thought we were going to talk about, like, milks and cheeses.
Oh, what's the goat cheese? Is it feta? I think it is.
Yeah, probably so.
But all right, let's get to the QB spotlight. This is the Ryan Fitzpatrick experience here. And, man, I can't tell if, like, this is just an issue where the offense misses Eric Decker that much or if Fitzpatrick is just simply regressing and he was always this kind of mediocre game manager type. What do you think is going on with Fitzpatrick?
Yeah, I think this was one of the easier calls to make in the offseason, was that he was going to regress. I don't know that it was easy to predict he would regress just this far, but he had such a lucky, well, I mean, he's good. I'm not saying he's a terrible quarterback, but he had a really lucky season, had some dropped interceptions, had things were going right for him for touchdowns. I think this has a lot to do with regression, and at this point, I think he kind of is this player that we should expect. He could probably have mediocre QB2 weeks, but if we were thinking he would hit that QB1 height, we probably had miscast him after last year.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. I think it's not only the fact that he's regressing, but I do think he and the offense misses Eric Decker. The fact that they had Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker basically all season in 2015 really kind of elevated the ceiling of everyone else in that offense, and I think we're seeing that. Matt Forte can't do the same type of stuff that he can. Bilal Powell can't do the same type of stuff that Eric Decker can, and we're seeing those effects plus just the natural regression you would expect really bring Fitzpatrick down. He's all the way down at QB 28 on the year in fantasy scoring, and that is, not where he was drafted. I mean, Carson Palmer's right there with him, so he's not the only disappointment, of course, but I don't know. Like, he's a guy like Eli where I think if you can maybe still sell some name brand value on him, you have to do it. But at the same time, maybe Decker comes back and things start to click again. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I am hesitant to say Decker is kind of the end all be all for the offense because I do think Marshall and Anunua are pretty reliable, and both Forte and Powell have a role. Decker's important, don't get me wrong, and I do think the offense is better with him on the field, but I don't know that him coming back, I'm ready to say Fitzpatrick is a different quarterback. I think, yeah, he certainly, I'm much more willing to sell Fitzpatrick than I am Manning at this point because Fitzpatrick's history is one kind of lucky exceptional season where Eli has had a decade of them. And so I'm more willing to hold Eli on my bench. Fitzpatrick, I don't know that he's going to really turn a corner to become a reliable starter this year.
So, what was one thing you noticed from just this week five matchup against the Steelers with Fitzpatrick?
Disappointment. I mean, like I said, I really think the Steelers are a favorable matchup. I do think they gave up a lot of fantasy points to some not good quarterbacks. And so that combined with the fact that we know the Steelers are going to score points, I figured this would be a shootout. This would be something where Fitzpatrick is slinging the ball. And he did throw almost 40 times. I was disappointed. I thought that this would be the time after coming off a tough Seahawks game, Fitzpatrick would kind of flip the switch and become a good quarterback, and we'd see him as a reliable QB2. And while he scored that way this week, I was disappointed.
Yeah, I think speaking to, the volume that he had in that game, the passes themselves weren't really the type of passes that you want to see a high volume of, though. It was like a lot of dump offs, a lot of screens. I feel like in reaction to all the interceptions he threw over the previous two games, he took on a bit too much of that game manager role. And that was the thing that stood out to me, was they just looked hyper conservative. And I know that you have to cut out the turnovers and how important that is from just an NFL football standpoint. But I don't know. Like, you just can't be that passive and that, willing to just like bend to what the defense gives you. You have to take some shots. You have to take some risks. And it seems like the only way he's willing to do that is by throwing to a covered Brandon Marshall. And that worries me going forward.
Yeah, and to that point, he's kind of forcing even his game managery type throws, which is just a really bad combination of not taking shots, but then taking bad ones when you're throwing short. He has the second worst completion percentage this season of the starting quarterbacks, again, the ones with at least 75 attempts, second to Aaron Rodgers, who has the worst completion percentage, which is a whole nother topic. But one of the things that's surprising is even though he's not completing a lot of passes and he is kind of taking that game manager role, he is 13th in passing yards. And so he's still getting volume. They're still moving up and down the field. It's just not pretty and they're not getting in the end zone. And so,
It's between the 20s.
right, exactly. And it kind of speaks to what we were talking about earlier, that touchdowns are so vital and this just doesn't look like an offense that's really succeeding when they get down to the 20.
Now, to be fair to him, I'm looking at his game log now, and the only really dud weeks that he put up were in semi-predictable bad matchups. You mentioned the Seattle game. The game before that in Kansas City was a total abomination, but that was in Arrowhead, which is one of the toughest places to play. I don't know, like, he put up 15 points or more in his other three games. And while that is disappointing based upon what he did last season, if we can kind of, you know, scale back our expectation of what, or our understanding of what Fitzpatrick is, to put him into that, you know, just boring QB2 zone with, you know, this giant crop of everyone else, Joe Flacco, Eli Manning, whoever else, it starts to make sense. And you really do have to kind of key in on the matchups when you're deciding between these guys.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably right. If we can see him in that role or in that mold, then he probably will be okay. He's someone that's worth playing. Yeah, like you said, he's had a touchdown in all but one of his five games. It's not as if he's dreadful, but yeah, maybe that QB2 streaming type is the right way to view him.
And I haven't looked at the red zone stats specifically, but I would imagine that they are the type of roster that is incentivized to throw when they are, you know, down by the goal line. Like, Matt Forte isn't a great goal line back. I don't think Bilal Powell is, you know, any great shakes in that department either. You know, when you have Brandon Marshall and Quincy Enunwa and hopefully a healthy Eric Decker at some point, like, those guys are all big targets who can do work in that space. And I don't know, maybe better days are ahead. I think that Fitzpatrick, I'm a little more optimistic about him returning general value than I am with a guy like Eli. So that gives me a little bit of hope. It seems like anytime you're talking about a New York athlete, you have to kind of look beyond that stuff and kind of factor in that public opinion a little bit more. And the perception of Fitzpatrick and the perception of the Jets right now is that they stink. And it would not surprise me if they made a change at QB. Now, what I want to ask you next, Josh, is if Fitzpatrick is benched, who do you want to see next? Geno Smith, Bryce Petty, or Christian Hackenberg?
I want to see Geno Smith because I've hung on to him for so long in my dynasty leagues that I want some value out of him. And I think he has that Konami code fantasy upside. Yeah, that's the answer for who I want to see on the field. I'd like to see another season of Geno Smith.
Again, you have made the correct answer. Now, who do you expect we will see if Fitzpatrick gets benched?
My read of the tea leaves is that Geno Smith is probably not going to get an opportunity. I think the team is pretty clearly just out on Geno. And so between Petty and Hackenberg, I don't have a good read for it. I'd have to look into the beat reporters and also see who's been active and inactive. I have not paid close attention to that QB3 spot, but I don't think that Geno Smith is viewed as a future starter in New York. And so if the team continues to lose and they're resigned to being out of it, I think they're going to give one of their younger guys a look.
Yeah, I see that. I just don't see how it can't be Geno, at least to start. Now, if Geno comes in and has a bad game, like, he's been there longer. He's the guy who has experience with the playbook and all that stuff. I guess Petty has that too, and we've never seen him, so there's some allure there, but I don't know. I don't understand why the Jets wouldn't give Geno a shot, because we've seen him actually be good before. You know, it's not like he's always looked terrible when he came in. It's kind of like a Brian Hoyer situation. He's been on the bench a long time, but why not see what you have when he's thrust into a real starter's role? Like, last year, it was just filling in for that one game. I want to see Geno, and I think we should see Geno. Now, expectations, yeah. The New York Jets franchise is one that is kind of a mystery to me, so it wouldn't surprise me if either of the other guys got that shot first, but I hope it's Geno. It should be Geno.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. If it was me, I would, as an NFL coach, I'd be putting in Geno. I just think, for whatever reason, whether it's the locker room stuff last year, whether he just, it's a personality issue, it doesn't seem to me like the team wants him to be their quarterback. And they're 1-4 already. If they continue to lose, I think they're looking to the future. And if they don't see him as the future and they're not worried about winning this year, I just could see them leapfrogging him and trying somebody else. But I'm with you. I would put in Geno because I do think he has shown some success.
All right. Well, let's keep it positive for Fitzpatrick for now and assume that he holds the job. Looking forward to next week. He's at Arizona. The Cardinals just gave up a big Thursday night football performance to Blaine Gabbert, but they've had extra time to prep for this matchup with the Jets, and it's in prime time too. That doesn't help. Will you start Fitzpatrick in fantasy this week against the Cardinals?
No, I'd be really surprised. Blaine Gabbert was really buoyed by his rushing ability, and Fitzpatrick has none of that.
Yeah, I would also stay away. I think that this might be the game where we do see him get benched, and it sucks because the schedule to this point for him has been, you know, not great. And I think that part of his struggles are a product of that. But I don't know. I think that if you can go any other direction, I mean, maybe not any other direction, I'd still start Fitzpatrick over Case Keenum, but I don't know. I'd be wary of using him this week if I had better options.
Yeah, no, he's a low option. I'm with you. Case Keenum, Cody Kessler, that type. But I think the Cardinals are a legitimately tough matchup, and Fitzpatrick is not going to rush for 60 yards to save his week.
Yeah. Well, let's look at some other games on tap here. Let's move on to the Niners, that Niners team that did just put up a fair amount of fantasy production on Arizona. And look at that. Colin Kaepernick has a new deal. Suddenly he's healthy enough to play. Do you expect him to start? And if so, what do you expect from him fantasy-wise in week six?
Yeah, it's this bizarre, like you said, all of a sudden he's healthy when the whole Chip Kelly has just been touting this, oh, he's not healthy, he's too lightweight now, he's just not right. And then he signs a new deal that kind of incentivizes the team to play him, and all of a sudden he's healthy. I think the signs are pointing towards Kaepernick getting a shot, if not this week, pretty soon. He is a more interesting version of Blaine Gabbert, probably, just bad passing totals and rushing upside. It's not exciting. He's one of those, like, you're going to plug him into your starting lineup and know that you're looking at somewhere between 2 and 30 points. But I do think the upside is probably better than it has been for Gabbert.
Yeah, to be a little bit more explicit on the contract stuff, he had a clause in his contract that if he got injured in game, that the Niners would have to pay his salary, and that's why they weren't playing him. And, I mean, that does open up possibilities for the Niners. I don't know if he's going to be that much better than Gabbert, to be honest, but I think at some point if they keep losing, they're going to have to make the switch just to see, because I don't know. At the very least, they might get some trade value out of him for pre-draft. And I mean, he hasn't had trade value ever because everyone expects the 49ers to cut Colin Kaepernick. But I don't know. Like, I could see them trying to wring a little bit more blood out of that stone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think that's a valid point just as far as the business of the NFL.
Yeah, it's a bizarre situation. Let's move on. Let's talk about Ben Roethlisberger. Now, last week on the Ben Roethlisberger Experience, we talked about his road splits and how they were pretty bad compared to his home splits. And he's going on the road this week, but he's going against the Miami defense that just let Marcus Mariota be the number one. Something's got to give here, right?
I think if anything's giving, it's the Dolphins defense. So,
they've been very giving so far. That is true.
Yeah, I mean, the whole team has just been struggling, as we were saying. I would expect Roethlisberger to do just fine despite the splits. That's my hunch.
Yeah, I think he's going to be great again. I am all on board with Roethlisberger. I feel bad for ever having doubted him in the preseason.
Yeah, it's the Dolphins have held quarterbacks okay in terms of fantasy totals. Obviously, this week notwithstanding, Russell Wilson had 14, Andy Dalton had 16, Kessler had 9.6, Jimmy Garoppolo had a fantastic one. But I think this is a team that is kind of spiraling downwards, and so just the mentality is getting worse as their play has gotten worse, and they are coming off just giving up a lot of touchdowns to Marcus Mariota.
Yeah. Moving on, Alex Smith returns from bye, so Sal's stoked. But my question is this. Will he be throwing and handing off to a healthy Jamal Charles? What sort of expectations do we have for JC?
It sure sounds that way. The reports are that Charles was getting close at their last game, and then having the bye week, he should be right there. I'm really interested to see what the role is going to be, though, because I do think that Spencer Ware has established himself enough that he's going to be on the field. I don't know that we can expect Charles to get the really high workloads that he may have in past years. I think there will be a split. I would expect that Charles is the 1A to Ware's 1B, or RB1 to RB2. But the problem is, I don't know that he's going to be such high volume that he's going to be worth the second round pick that some people spent on him.
Yeah, probably not. And I was one of those people who spent those picks. I'm a little concerned about that timeshare, but at the same time, this matchup at Oakland just is so appealing. Heading into week five, Oakland had the third worst DVOA against the run, and they also were bad against running backs as receivers, which does give me a lot of hope for Charles this weekend. The big question is the health. You know, how ready is he? Now, the fact that he came back last game, I think bodes well. He didn't play a lot. He didn't look great, but, you know, he didn't need to. necessarily. I think it just, for me, I just needed to see him on the field taking snaps, because that shows me that at least they're confident that he can, take hits and all that good stuff. Now that he has, the bye week under his belt, a little bit of game action and a fantastic matchup, I think I'm going to be using him this weekend. I won't feel totally great about it, but again, if you drafted him with that sort of capital in the preseason, you kind of have to. You're probably just so invested that you can't help it, and that's where I'm at with most of my rosters that have Jamaal Charles.
Yeah, I think that's right. And Raiders Saints in the next 2 weeks, this looks like Jamaal Charles and Alex Smith could both really become much more valuable in the coming weeks.
All right, a couple rapid fire ones before we close up shop here, Josh. And the first is one that is kind of a multi-parter, but is it safe to assume week six returns for Cam Newton, Carson Palmer, and Trevor Siemian?
Yeah, the concussion protocol is something that I hate predicting because you just never know how someone's going to wake up the next day. But I think it's safe to assume they're all coming back from the news that we're hearing right now. Yeah.
Yeah, the only one I'd really have any sort of concern about is Siemian. I think that Newton and Palmer are almost sure things to play. But we'll see. Just watch the reports there. I'm sure that Sal and Jim will have some news on that, and other people at the site as well. Last one. When are we going to see Jared Goff? Is it time yet?
I think it's been time for a while, and
Since week one, maybe?
yeah, if it wasn't Jeff Fisher, it probably would happen. I will admit, I'm legitimately worried by all of the reports about how Goff just can't pick up the offense, hasn't looked good, and the fact that a bad Case Keenum continues to play. I really am thinking it may be kind of nearer the end of the season, like week 10, 11, 12, before we see Goff.
That's such a crock of shit that like he can't pick up the offense. It's like you drafted him to be your quarterback. Find an offense that works for him. I mean, steal some plays from
Absolutely.
college. Like, you have to put these guys in situations to succeed. And it's not like Dak Prescott went in there and he learned the playbook as well as Tony Romo knows it, right? It's like, ah, man, it's so frustrating, especially when the guy they're running out there is just such a, I don't know. I don't want to say bad things about these players. We just talked earlier about how, we shouldn't objectify the players quite as much as we do in fantasy, but Case Keenum is not a very good quarterback. Full stop. Sorry, Case, but you're not. And Jared Goff might not be either, but, they drafted him to be better than Case Keenum. They expected him to be better. And how are they going to know if they don't let him play? And how are they going to know if they don't, put him in a situation to succeed? Now, I guess the counterpoint to that would be that they can't put Case Keenum in a situation to succeed. How could they do that for Goff, right?
Right, no, it's true. And as long as the division stays as up for grabs as it has been, and the Rams are right there in the thick of it, I don't know that Jeff Fisher makes that move. I think he'd need to be more convinced that the team was struggling. Whereas right now, with the Cardinals doing so poorly, and just like I said, the whole division kind of being a dogfight, I don't know that they're going to make a move soon.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. And that's probably the main reason they're not, is because they're still in the race. I don't see any way they can beat Seattle. Maybe they have some wild card aspirations just based on their defense and Todd Gurley, but is that that's just the worst place to be as, an NFL team is good enough to make the playoffs and lose in round one. Like, you don't want to be that team. You want to, have a better draft pick. You want to, find out who your good players are, so that you can play them in the next season. And they're not doing that with Goff. It's kind of driving me crazy. Anything else you want to touch on before we wrap things up here, Josh?
I'll just say we're almost to halftime in this Monday night game, and it has been ugly. Both Winston and Anderson with less than 75 yards passing. Jacquizz Rodgers has 15 carries. He's really been the only fantasy asset so far.
What's he
So
done with those 15 carries,
not
though?
great. 64 yards, over 4 yards a carry.
Okay, that's
And
interesting.
looking, he's got 3 catches for 16 yards as well. They are really leaning on him, but I've been kind of watching off and on as we've been recording, and it's been ugly. So the Panthers will be very happy to have Cam Newton back if we're correct that he's back next week.
And so will fantasy owners. I'm about to head off and go try to catch the end of that baseball game I was talking about earlier. But in the meantime, Josh, why don't you tell the good listeners what you have on tap for them at 2QBs?
Yeah, so I'm still writing a weekly column called Moving Targets, just looking at target distribution on a few teams and looking at players that performed above or below their average for the rest of the season, just seeing if we can find opportunity. And so it's nothing groundbreaking, but it's always interesting to me to kind of highlight a few players that saw a lot of targets and then debate whether that's a sign of things to come or a chance to sell high. And so that's kind of the weekly thing I have going on other than the podcast. What about you?
So I've been doing rankings at the site and the game's Flobotics spreadsheet. I might have to come up with a better name for it because it's so hard for me to say it. But you should check those out for sure. I usually post them on Wednesdays or early Thursdays in time for the Thursday night game. The Flobotics spreadsheet is a lot of work, so sometimes it takes me a little while. There's just a ton of good stuff going on at 2QBs.com. That's TWOQBS.com. Come by, check it out. Please, if you also have time, rate and review the podcast on Stitcher. You can follow us on Twitter at 2QBs. We record these on Monday nights, so if you want to tweet us any questions on Mondays, we might be able to get to them on the episodes. You can follow me on Twitter at Greg Sauce. You can follow Josh at Lake2QBs. Again, that's the TWO spelling. You can find us on Facebook. Give us a like there. We'd appreciate it. And our email address is 2QBs@gmail.com. If you have any longer form questions, Josh, episode 23 in the books, week 5 in the books. Man, what's next?
Flying by. I know. I think playoffs are around the corner now.
Yeah, I mean, how are your teams doing?
It's kind of a mixed bag. I'm still very happy. The Scott Fishbowl, I continue to put together wins, so that's been fun. But it's a mixed bag across the board. I've got some teams at the top, and I've got my staff league team, our 2QB staff league, that is just dreadful, but the worst of the worst. So just like any season, I'm kind of good and bad.
Yeah, I've been having some similar experiences. I play in enough leagues where to have if I didn't have a mixed bag, I'd be surprised. But the Scott Fishbowl is turning around. I've made some nice pickups there. My home leagues are where I'm struggling the most, but it's not for lack of points. I've just been kind of a victim of the schedule for the most part. And in the staff league, man, I've kind of turned into a bit of a juggernaut. I rolled up a bunch of points this week, had some good pickups there as well, and I just got Tom Brady back, so that's been helping a lot. But yeah, there's a long way to go. We're going to be there right with you, listeners, so keep on coming back to the 2QB experience, and we will catch you next time. Adios.